The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Just before 9 p.m. Thursday night on Paris's famed Avenue des Champs-Élysées, teeming with tourists and locals, when shots rang out near the Franklin Roosevelt metro station, as an armed attacker opened fire on a police van with officers on a public order detail. One officer was killed in the van, two others gravely wounded on the nearby sidewalk.
It's a tragedy for the police, a tragedy for our country. Since a police officer has been killed and two others badly wounded, they were apparently deliberately targeted.
The shooter was killed by return fire from other officers.
He came out with a Kalashnikov. He started firing. He would have targeted us on the pavement and killed more people, but he targeted the policeman, and the policeman shot him down.
A counter-terrorism investigation has been launched under the authority of the Paris Prosecutor's Office. President François Hollande says he is convinced of the nature of the attack.
We are convinced that the track the investigation is on will reveal that this incident is of a terrorist nature.
Police sources say the gunman was known to security services as a terrorist suspect and was being investigated on suspicion of intent to kill officers.
That's a report from a French news channel last evening. Another attack in Paris. This time a gunman murders a policeman and then critically wounds two others. They're at the Champs-Élysées. ISIS has claimed responsibility, and it happens right on the... right as we're, a couple days away from the first round of the presidential elections in France. But going back to these attacks that are now so frequent, we moved to Edstone on January 7th, 2015. It doesn't even seem like it was that long ago. Well, it wasn't. A little over 2 years ago. And we arrived here on the same day as that massacre at Charlie Hebdo, followed then by the attack at the Jewish market. And since that time, since we arrived at Edstone, there have been 20 terrorist attacks on French soil, resulting in 238 deaths. You had the Charlie Hebdo, as I say. You had the attack in Paris later that year. That multiple attacks, in fact, on one night. I think it was November 13th. 2015, and then of course the truck ramming last summer, and then all kinds of little attacks thrown in. 238 deaths from all of these terrorist attacks just since January of 2015. I mean, how much longer can this go on for France, for Germany, for the rest of Europe? Daniel 11:40, we touched on it yesterday. The coming clash between radical Islam and between Catholic Europe. Daniel 11 and verse 40. Read it. It's about the time of the end, it says. And at the time of the end, the king of the south shall push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and with horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. The king of the south is pushing, and there's some dramatic changes yet to happen in Europe. And these attacks are certainly influencing those changes. Here, as I say, this latest one comes just 3 days before the first round of the presidential elections. In fact, the attack last night, it happened It happened while the presidential candidates were debating on live TV in France. And so commentators are already writing about the terrorists' attempt to influence the outcome. The people debating are those running for president. They adjusted, according to the Telegraph, they altered their closing comments there during the debate because of this latest attack. Marine Le Pen said, enough of laxism, enough of the naivete. And then another candidate, Mr. Fillon, he said the fight against terrorism must be the absolute priority of the next French president. So how will this influence Sunday's first round of the presidential election? Well, it's already influenced the debate. It's influenced the activities today. That Marine Le Pen has canceled a speech that she was supposed to give today. Same with Mr. Fillon, Francois Fillon. Here's what the Daily Telegraph here in the UK had to say. With poll, I mean, it was already a very unusual presidential campaign season in France. A lot of uncertainty. It could go in any direction, we've been told. And now this, the Telegraph says, with polls suggesting the race is incredibly tight between the top four candidates, the top four candidates, many analysts have warned that any last-minute event could affect the final result. Now, we're not here to predict who's going to win, but there's a number of reasons why we're definitely watching what happens in these presidential races in Europe in particular, and how it impacts not only France, but how it impacts the European Union. It says, although polls suggest she's on track to come in the top two of Sunday's first round vote, along with Mr. Macron, political analysts have suggested that Ms. Le Pen has been losing steam in recent days, and she's trying to get back into it. And then now you have another attack at this tourist site. All kind, thousands of tourists visiting this place every day. It says in 2015, let me just skip down a little bit further. It remains to be seen, it says, this is the Telegraph, whether the shooting will be politically damaging for Mr. Macron, the inexperienced ex-economy minister whose Achilles heel is considered to be security. Critics have sought to portray him as soft on security, that is. Mr. Macron was among the first candidates to react to the attack during the TV debate, offering condolences to the slain policeman's family and warning that France would have to live with the terror threat for years to come. Is this something, though, that Europe is just going to sit back and live with? Some are suggesting that that's just the way it's going to be. But as we've been saying all along, you can look for Germany to take the lead. You can look for a German strongman to take the lead and to fight back. That's what Daniel 11 and verse 40 says. After the pushing, and the pushing and the pushing, then the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. Going back to the unlevel of, or the rather the level of uncertainty in the lead up to this first round of the presidential election, even before this attack last night, this is what the Daily Beast had to say about what it calls the insane French elections. It says, after a year of high-stakes electoral surprises, France may bring us the most important, disturbing, and dangerous one yet. This is the Daily Beast writing, of course, about the past year, Brexit, and then the election of Donald Trump. And now the most important and perhaps the most dangerous and disturbing one of all. The Daily Beast says that the U.S. is finally waking up to what's happening in France and in Europe. So much of the time, of course, Americans are just kind of, they're into American-centric news. The Daily Beast says here, the biggest winner in the forthcoming French presidential elections may well be Russian President Vladimir Putin. Putin can now sit back, it says, and watch the French try to destroy the European Union and the NATO alliance he hates so much. I mean, they're watching it in Russia. Of course, they're watching it in Germany. I've got another one here from Spiegel that I'll get to here in just a second. It says less than 3 weeks from now, in the final round of the presidential elections, the only choice left to the voters of France could well be between Le Pen, a crypto-fascist, and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, a charismatic communist. Now, again, we don't know which two are going to win on Sunday. The two top vote-getters on Sunday then go to the final election. I think that's on May the 7th. But it says here, victory for either one would mean an end to the political, diplomatic, and economic order that has protected the United States as well as Europe for the last 70 years, preventing the kinds of cataclysms, World Wars I and II, that cost millions of lives in the first half of the 20th century, while containing first Soviet and now Russian adventurism. I mean, you're just seeing more and more pieces like this. More and more commentators saying that the order that protected the West, that protected Europe, that protected the United States from cataclysms like World Wars I and II, it's crumbling right before our eyes. Where is this leading? I read just yesterday, I think it was on the program as well, I know I got into it, with the TV taping that we had last night, that section of scripture there in Revelation 3, where God tells the Sardis era of his church, be watchful. You better be watching. If you don't watch, it says in Revelation 3, I think it's verse 3, if you don't watch, you're going to be caught unawares. You're going to be shocked. Of course, Paul talks about this as well in 1 Thessalonians 5. Be watchful. Make sure you're opening your eyes to what's happening. The Daily Beast says here, everyone knows how unreliable polling was in the Brexit vote and before the Trump victory. But here in France, with some 30% of the electorate saying they have not yet decided who to vote for less than a week before they go to polls, and many others saying they might change their mind at the last minute, nobody even pretends to be sure how things will play out. Just to add to the confusion, abstention rates in the first round are expected to be at an all-time high of about 35%. So no one knows. I mean, I guess there's four that are all close to each other, that are all bunched up. And then there's a record level of people that aren't even going to turn out for the vote. And so how will this turn? What will be the outcome Sunday night or Monday morning? Well, you can be sure that whatever the result will be, it'll fall right in line with all of these significant prophecies about Europe, about the world. At the beginning of the year, the Daily Beast says, the obvious frontrunner was François Fillon, the very conservative former prime minister in the government of President Nicolas Sarkozy from 2007 to 2012. Fillon, it says, 63, has cultivated an image of maturity and experience. Well, it goes into some of his background, but then it also talks about some of the troubles that he's run into. So who is left? The wonderkind banker turned presidential advisor, turned economy minister, and then leader of an independent centrist movement, Emmanuel Macron. In March, he was the flavor of the month. Polls showed that he would make it to the second round of the elections, maybe even edging past Le Pen, then defeat her decisively. It says, but two televised debates took much of the wind out of Macron's sails. And so then there's Le Pen, And Melanchon. Who's going to come out on top? And what will be the result or the impact of this latest terrorist attack? We're watching, of course, we're watching the French elections because of the impact that this could have on France's standing in the European Union or the growth of these far-right movements all across Europe because of the way it'll impact the European Union itself and in particular Germany. It's already, according to the Telegraph, it's already impacting Europe's economy. Uncertainty due to the French election is already impacting the European economy, the Telegraph says. And I thought it was interesting, right at the end of this piece, it says, in such a poisonous political atmosphere, the will to sustain monetary union would ebb away. And so those in the monetary union are concerned, particularly if one like Le Pen gets in there who's calling for a referendum on the euro and wants out of the EU. Well, Germany in particular, it has its eyes wide open, carefully observing what's happening in France. Just as it was carefully observing what happened in the U.S. elections a few months ago. Spiegel's headline is that the extremists in France are pushing the nation to the brink. It says here, a right-wing populist party has spent months at the top of the polls, neck and neck, with the former rising star of the entrenched party who decided to bolt. And, well, here again, it just goes into some of the background of these candidates. It is, of course, a completely unrealistic scenario, but it is the thrilling truth in France in April 2017. The main players are Marine Le Pen, Emmanuel Macron, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, François Hollande, and François Fillon, and together they're illustrating a complete breakdown of established politics in France. It's pretty critical, this piece from this leading German daily, Spiegel. The German commentators talking about France, the total breakdown of France, of established politics in France. It says here, if you add together the poll numbers of the French candidates who are calling for such forms of withdrawal, these are the groups calling for, let's get out of the EU, let's get out of NATO, let's withdraw from globalization and so on, or let's just withdraw from the system. Spiegel says here, if you add them all together, you end up with a majority. It says the presidential election, well, let me move forward. This is a longer piece. Make sure I get through the high spots. It says there's no longer a clear forecast, neither for the first round nor for the second round on May 7th. According to pollsters, 40% of eligible voters are still undecided, meaning that all possible combinations are possible at the moment. It could go any way. But as it asks later, I mean, how did the extremists become the front runners? That's what Germany's wondering. How are these extreme fringe groups now, you know, in the front of the pack? It says not just because the threat of terrorism has permeated every everyday life in France like a fine mist, more than in most other European countries, and not just because Muslim and right-wing extremist agitators are seeking to divide the country. There's more to it than just this threat from Islam, the threat of terrorism. It says this is a frightening question, one that until recently seldom got raised in highly developed democracies, but today it is a crucial factor in some of the world's largest, oldest democracies, in Britain, in the United States, and now in France. It says in newspaper editorials and talk shows, the French are discussing whether the country's institutions have maneuvered themselves into a pre-revolutionary plight as a result of the continued incompetence of public officials. They want change. just like we saw in the United States, like we've seen here in Britain. They no longer have confidence in the political class. They want someone to come along and shake things up. Okay, but how does this impact Europe? And more important still, what does your Bible say about it? What does the Bible prophesy? Spiegel says, if a nation like this is no longer or only barely capable of producing a credible candidate for the office of president, there's something rotten in the country. That's Spiegel talking about the French election. France can't even produce a credible candidate for the office of president. France is rotting from within, says Spiegel. That's pretty amazing commentary here. It talks about who could possibly win in the runoff election with possible scenarios. But it says here the surprising strength of someone like Mélenchon feeds on the pathetic weakness of the old mainstream parties in France, which have become disconnected from the people and society and have lost their desire to shape policy. This is and has been the situation for some time, so there's lots to criticize. The way Germany sees it, there's lots to criticize with respect to France's political system. But what about Germany's? And what will emerge out of Germany's forthcoming election? That's later on this year. Well, we've got some things to say about that as well. We've had it at the trumpet for a number of years. Well, let me just get to the conclusion of this Spiegel piece. It says here, if Macron and Le Pen both emerge from the first round of voting, a scenario pollsters had considered to be the most likely until recently, it will amount to a battle between two worlds. Both politicians believe there is a systematic crisis in France, but they have completely different definitions of what that means. Be it Le Pen, Macron, or Mélenchon, all are beneficiaries of the decline of established politics. Most of the candidates who have felt the need to run for president this year aren't even qualified to lead the country. This is Spiegel magazine. Most of the candidates who've run for president are not qualified to lead the country, let alone a nuclear power or Europe's second largest economy. If it's true that a nation only gets the political leaders it deserves, then things are not well in France. That's the way the editors at Spiegel magazine see it. And so what happens if there is a dramatic shakeup? Not just in France, but in the European Union. We know there's going to be some dramatic reforming of this union. It's going to be downsized. Your Bible says so, Revelation 17 and verse 12. We also touched on that earlier this week. Today at the trumpet.com, we reposted an article by my father. It was from January of last year, and he's writing this article basically in response to that massive attack on Paris back in November of 2015. And really, you can read the entire article as we wrote there to preface it and see that it's just as applicable today after the latest attack last night as it was back in January. Where is this leading? Where are these attacks leading? Where will the French elections lead? Everyone's watching. My father made this point in that piece from more than a year ago. They're watching what France will do next. They're watching what ISIS is going to do next. We need to be watching all of Europe and what Europe does going forward. My father wrote in that piece, here again, this is reposted at thetrumpet.com. I don't think it's in the top position right at the moment. But you can scroll down and get to this article that we've reposted. And my father says here, the Bible actually prophesied what is happening right now in France and the rest of Europe. It forecasts how the continent will react to this event and the long-term trends that are rising to a boil there. Europe will unite into a superpower consisting of 10 kings. And it will go to real war with radical Islam. We just read that, Daniel 11 and verse 40. And of course, the 10 kings, they're referred to over in Revelation 17, 12, as well as the Daniel 2 image. My father says, if you look at that trend in the aftermath of the Paris attacks, it leaps out at you in a powerful way. And then he covers some important history. This is history that people forget. The Holy Roman Empire has united Europe six times throughout the ages. I mean, there's always been this push in Europe to unite the continent. And it's brought on in most of those other resurrections by violence. But here today, I mean, it's happening without Europe having to fire a shot. Now, there are threats. There's pushing, of course, coming from radical Islam. That's really pushing these dramatic events forward. But here we already see a massive European Union, 28 member states and I think 16 in the Eurozone. It's there. I mean, the form is there. It just needs a little restructuring, and then it fits right in line with what the Bible prophesies. My father makes the point in this piece that these terrorist attacks are only going to bring Europe more closely together. The nations of Europe, I should say. The core nations of that union. And then my father says one of these European leaders that we need to be watching is the former German defense minister, Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg. He was talking about a need for stronger unity even before that massive attack in November of 2015. He compared the EU to 28 doctors trying to operate on a sick patient. We've got to come together. There needs to be leadership. That's what he was saying in 2015. And if you know the history with zu Guttenberg, he resigned in 2011 over a plagiarism scandal. He's kept a relatively low profile over the years, but he's making a comeback, and he's coming out with stronger messages, urging Germany to take bolder action. My father says in his piece, Gutenberg chose the perfect time to speak out. More and more people will look to him as the strong man that the current chancellor is not. So we'll see what happens with these French elections on Sunday and then on May 7th. And then we look forward to what happens later this year in Germany. My father said, this is from that piece a year ago, Gutenberg's also directing his criticism at European leaders. He said none of these leaders are willing to sacrifice their jobs to save their country. I have to believe, here's my father speaking, I have to believe that the Germans are going to love what they hear from him, especially after the catastrophe that filled Paris's streets with blood. Now, we've made this point all the way through. All these attacks in Paris and around France, of course, there's been quite a few in Germany. Even since we moved here as well. Gutenberg himself was saying, even before the massive attack at the end of 2015, what happens when we have our German Charlie Hebdo? What happens when it's on our soil? He's got a message that really and truly does resonate already, even. Back to my father's piece, he says, these dramatic events show that we live in shocking times, but amazingly, they prove that the Bible's prophecies are right. The Bible prophesies that Europe will condense into a union of 10 kings following a fierce leader backed by the Vatican, and that this superpower will strike radical Islam. That's what your Bible prophesies. And so we wait for Europe to be condensed. We wait for the 28 to turn into 10. 10 kings, 10 groups, headed up by one strong man. And as my father says, backed by the Vatican, a superpower. I read to you that piece yesterday that talked about how Europe's a superpower already. Right now, if you take them together, if you take them together as one, if you analyze world events, even today, by adding all of the collective efforts of these member states, the power is there. My father's made the point before. The empire is there. It just needs the emperor. It just needs the king. Notice what it says over in Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 1. It says in verse 11, my father alludes to this at the end of his piece, this article that we reposted today at thetrumpet.com. Go back and read it. The title is Where the Paris Attack is Leading. In fact, if you just search, as I did this morning, Paris Attacks at thetrumpet.com, you're going to get quite a few articles because there have been so many attacks. But you're going to get quite a few articles that show up at thetrumpet.com. You can know, you can understand where this is leading. Where the Paris attack is leading. It's from the January 2016 print version of The Trumpet. And you can get to that at thetrumpet.com today. Jeremiah 1 and verse 11, it says, Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? What do you see? We have to be looking. We have to be observing. We have to be watching. What is it that you see in all of this? What is it that's happening? It says, Then said the Lord unto me, You have well seen, for I will hasten my word to perform it. That's verse 12. And then verse 13, And the word of the Eternal came unto me the second time, saying, What do you see? What do you see? And Jeremiah said, I see a seething pot, and the face thereof is toward the north. That's what I see, a boiling pot. A boiling pot, my father said in the article, that this, well, after the clash, after Europe strikes radical Islam, Daniel 11:40, then it will be like a boiling pot that overflows not only onto the Middle East, but onto Britain, America, and Israel as well. That's what it's going to be like. That's what Jeremiah saw. A boiling pot, a seething pot, and the face thereof is toward the north. That's Jeremiah 1 and verse 13. And the Eternal said unto me, Out of the north an evil shall break forth upon the inhabitants of the land. That's what's coming from out of the north. There's the kings of the north and south. The king of the south is currently pushing at the king of the north. But that king of the north is going to answer back. It's going to come against the king of the south like a whirlwind. Let me just look over at that passage in 1 Thessalonians that I mentioned just a bit ago. 1 Thessalonians and chapter 5, the example in Revelation 2, remember. What do you see, God says? And to the brethren in Sardis, God said, What do you see? Open your eyes. Be watchful. Be watchful. Maybe I could just reread that again to get the wording just right. Revelation 3 and verse 2, where God says to them, Be watchful. And then verse 3, notice the warning. It says, Remember therefore how you have received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore you shall not watch, I will come on you as a thief. If you don't watch, you're going to be caught by surprise. You've got to keep your eyes opened to what's happening. What do you see? God said to his prophet. Verse 3, this is back to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 3, it says, "For when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." When they're talking about, all the diplomats are talking about peace and safety, this is what comes upon our peoples, our nations. It comes suddenly. Paul said, "But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief." See, it won't overtake us as a thief, not like with those brethren in Sardis. Why? It says in verse 5, you're children of light and the children of the day. We're not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. Just as Jesus said in the Gospels, watch and pray. Or watch unto prayer, as Peter said in his epistle. Let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for an helmet, the hope of salvation. We're children of the light, and God says to us, be watchful. God says, okay, this is happening here, this is happening over there. What do you see? Where, as my father asked in that article from just a little over a year ago, where is this leading? You can know where it's leading. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll go through a few emails before the program is over, a few emails that have come in response to our Trumpet Brief over the last few weeks. And also, in looking at the clock, I'll see if we can maybe get through another item or two of news. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. The Trumpet Daily.
On yesterday's program, I went through just how the New York Times basically has covered the firing of Bill O'Reilly from Fox News, and then of course the op-ed piece that it ran from that convicted terrorist, I think in Monday's edition. And just following on some of that, David French had an interesting, really a pretty profound piece at National Review, where he just talked about some of these conservative commentators that have had a meteoric rise in fame and then to fall as well, almost as dramatic. But he titles it O'Reilly Ailes and the Toxic Conservative Celebrity Culture. He says here, this is at National Review from, I think, yesterday. It says, there are those who say that the left is taking scalps, and they have a list of Republican victims to prove their thesis. Roger Ailes is out at Fox News. Bill O'Reilly's out at Fox News. Michael Flynn is out at the White House. Those three names, the head of the most powerful cable news network, the highest-rated cable news personality, and the national security advisor, represent a stunning wave of resignations and terminations. And then French says, but this isn't scalp taking, it's scalp giving. He says, time and again, prominent conservative personalities have failed to uphold basic standards of morality or even decency. Time and again, the conservative public has rallied around them, seeking to protect their own against the wrath of a vengeful left. Time and again, the defense has proved unsustainable as the sheer weight of the facts buries the accused. What he's getting at here is that to be a conservative these days doesn't mean that you're necessarily moral or even decent. I mean, it's the character that's in crisis, just like we say in our booklet. And where do you find, or hear, even on the right, particularly in America, those who are standing up for the truth, God's truth, righteousness, character, commandment keeping? French says here, moreover, the pattern is repeating itself with the younger generation of conservative celebrities. The sharp rise and meteoric fall of both Tommy Lahren and Milo Yiannopoulos were driven by much the same dynamic that sustained O'Reilly for years, even in the face of previous sexual harassment complaints. Lahren and Yiannopoulos were fighters, he says, in quotes, who tell it like it is. O'Reilly was the master of the no-spin zone and seemed fearless in taking on his enemies. And again, like I said yesterday, I don't know all the details of these individuals and their struggles, their recent struggles. But he brings up a good point, and that if you don't have the character to go with it, well, you can see why there's some meteoric falls. It says further, let me just skip down through to the end. He concludes by saying, the conservative movement, this is David French at the National Review, the conservative movement includes some of the best and most admirable people I've ever met. It also includes its share of grasping, ambitious fame hounds, people who live for the next Fox hit and angle to write this year's version of the liberals are sending this country into, you know what, a best-selling book. But bad character, listen to this, bad character sends a country to, you know what, just as surely as bad policy does. And any movement that asks its members to defend vice in the name of advancing allegedly greater virtue is ultimately shooting itself in the foot. I mean, there's not going to be any substance. There's not going to be any foundation on which to build. If we're not advancing character and morality, it's exactly like the forefathers said. I mean, if you're not a religious or moral people, this American experiment's not going to work. It's not going to pan out. He says O'Reilly's fall can be an important act of public hygiene, but only if it represents the beginning of the end of a conservative culture that makes us behave like the cultural enemies we purport to despise. That's really the message That's really the message of Christ's gospel, that we have to be doers of the word. We can't be hypocrites. And we're all sinners, and we've all made mistakes, for sure. And I'm not saying there aren't those who are pounced on. I brought this out yesterday. Pounced on by the media. When it's someone that doesn't agree with their agenda, it can be brutal and vicious. And I'm sure a lot of that's going to be aimed right at God's church as we draw closer to the return of Jesus Christ. And our best defense is going to be being doers of the word, followers of Christ, Christians, not in name only, but in how we behave and how we live and what we're doing day in and day out. As I say, that's a piece at National Review today by David French. The date is April 20th, so yesterday. When we come back, we'll run through a few statistics and then also go through a few responses that have come in via email over the last couple of weeks. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily.
We're still getting quite a few people subscribing to the Trumpet Brief. That's the daily email, almost daily over the last week and a half or so. We've had a few days without the Trumpet Brief because of travel and God's holy days and such. In any event, over this past week, we've added 153 new subscribers to the Trumpet Brief. And you'd also be interested to know, I think, too, that last night you didn't get this. If you've subscribed and you read our emails, you didn't receive this email last evening or early this morning. It was one that we sent out to, I think, approximately 15,000 or 16,000 people that have never opened our emails. I think the industry standard is about 20% open emails coming from organizations or mass emails that go out. A lot of people, of course, just delete these, and we've been keeping with that 20% figure from the start, even though, as I've said earlier, our email list is one that we've accumulated over the course of many, many years, and we've just waited with this new format that we've had at thetrumpet.com and then the new Trumpet Briefs that we've been sending out now for over a month. We wanted to give it about a month of people receiving all of these emails before we then sent out a final email to those that haven't been opening our messages to tell them that we're going to stop sending those emails unless they hit subscribe or resubscribe for the service. And so that went out last night, which should pretty much cut the email subscription list that we have in half, which means that the percentage that opened the email is probably going to go up significantly over the next few days. So we were glad to prune that back some, and we've had actually, I think, a handful of people that, even after not responding to any of our emails over the past month, have responded to the one last night and said, you know, please keep me on your list. So that's something that happened yesterday. This afternoon, later today, we'll have another email brief, a trumpet brief going out along with some of the highlights from thetrumpet.com over the past week. So you can look for that this weekend. A few responses that have come in, responses to the trumpet brief. It says here, I'm really impressed with the work that you, the trumpet staff, have provided for us. So I pray every day and every night that this wonderful, mighty work can speed up the second coming of Christ in this very turbulent and lawless world. It says, in addition, I'd like to thank from the bottom of my heart for your thank you for your beautiful and knowledgeable truth about past events in history, what will happen in the future, and to do it with such penetrating God-given insight using prophecy as your guide. This one here comes from South Australia. It says, I want to thank you first for the work that you're doing for us to learn something more about our precious God and Jesus Christ. It says, I'll be thankful to receive those books that you offered. And then it says here, finally, thank you all and happy Easter. So we might need to send him an additional book in addition to the ones that he's thankful to receive. That came from South Australia. Another one here, it says, I wish to thank you for all the information being posted on your site. I've been downloading a lot of material as of late, including all the videos, both past and present. I've spent the past 34 years of my life reading all the books and booklets from your site, including everything that Herbert W. Armstrong ever wrote. I want to thank you for helping me turn my entire life toward God. And he goes on to say that, well, he goes through some of his background and the lead up to his baptism. Another one here, I just finished chapter 7 of this incredible book last night. This was in response to, I believe this was the trumpet brief that Joel Hilliker sent out a week ago, where he talked about the new book, the online book, Biblical Manhood. If you go to the literature tab at thetrumpet.com and then click on the literature, you can see the beautiful cover that we have for this it's a pretty lengthy lengthy book that we're not printing as yet, but that we do want to make available to you at thetrumpet.com. This particular email points out that he's through chapter 7 now. I'm so excited about this content, and it says here, we men need this. Thank you. That comes from Johannesburg, South Africa. Another one here in response to the trumpet brief. It says, wow, how do you do it? This brief is anything but. I'm overwhelmed with the articles, as one is more than expected, yet another offers a mind-opening view not previously thought of. It says here, this trumpet brief is greatly appreciated. Thank you all. Another one writes, I love your work and only wish there was a blog so that we could write and discuss thoughts with your staff. Well, maybe we can add that to thetrumpet.com at some point. As it is, I think it's about all that we can do to keep posting and producing programs, podcasts, videos, articles, trumpet briefs, and on it goes. Speaking of videos, by the way, we did produce another one. We're hurrying to try to get it out today, but we recorded one last night that advertises the Key of David booklet and then also the United States and Britain in Prophecy. And it's built around the content, part of the content that I used for yesterday's radio program about the Key of David vision and how that God opens the door to get that message out to the largest audience. So we recorded that yesterday in hopes that we can put that to air next weekend here in the UK. And of course, we'll post it at thetrumpet.com next Friday as well. One final comment. This one here says, I always want to be able to share single stories, then everything on Facebook. Many don't want to spend a lot of time trying to read a long article. And now I can post parts of the magazine. So that's someone who's appreciative of the Facebook postings, which some of them are a little shorter and easier, I suppose, to pass around. Well, that brings us to the end of another week of broadcasting. We're already at Friday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.